Lately, one of the most common questions I get is, do you really love the Bare Face skincare that you talk and you post about? Well, the answer is yes. I have been consistently using a routine that a Bare Face skincare specialist selected for me during my free consultation, and my skin is glowing. The texture has improved, and I love how simple the routine is. Just from following Bare Face founder, nurse practitioner Jordan Harper on Instagram, I've learned so much about my skin and what it needs to look healthier. You too can text one of Jordan's skincare specialist for a complimentary consult and get started on the routine that is best for your skin type. They have a couple of new products that I think you'll be excited to try too, including the Everyday Hero reusable eye patches. We love that Bare Face Girls are big fans of the podcast, so they have offered Got It From My Mama listeners 15% off their first purchase by using the code MAMA15 at checkout. Tucker and I have a product that we are so excited to tell you about. Coat Defense has been a game changer in trying to keep Tucker smelling good and looking handsome, even though he loves to roam all over our property and get dirty. Coat Defense is a daily preventative powder that reduces the number of baths I have to give Tucker. Do you know how hard it is to wash an 80-pound golden retriever? It also eliminates the bacteria that can cause odor in the first place. And unlike a typical deodorant or spray, Coat Defense is healthier. It doesn't mask the odor, it eliminates it. So there's less scratching, paw licking, and head shaking, and a whole lot more cuddle time with mom because he just stays so much fresher. Tucker's friends at Coat Defense are offering you 15% off to try the daily preventative powder or any of the other awesome products they offer for your pet's health. Just use code MAMA15 at checkout. When Priscilla Block's mom, Lori, told me about her vision board and shared all the ways that she is reinventing herself after raising 5 children and stepping out as a single mom for the first time, I was so inspired by her vulnerability in our conversation. It is obvious the apple does not fall far from the tree in this mother-daughter relationship, but I especially loved hearing how Lori says Priscilla has inspired her in so many ways as a woman. Priscilla came along for the interview, so it was double the fun. Be sure to listen for the bonus episode featuring Priscilla. Lori Block is here. I'm so happy to meet you, and your personality from the time you walked in the door is just this exuberant, joyful. I mean, no doubt, are you Priscilla Block's mama?
I am. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And we're just going to let the cat out of the bag that you brought a visitor when you came walking up the sidewalk. You were not by yourself. You brought Priscilla, and I was so excited to see her.
Yeah. I was excited when she said, do you want me to come? And I'm like, yes, please come.
It's the first time we've actually had an artist come with their mom. So I think that's so awesome. And she's just here to cheer you on, which is great. Mm-hmm. So tell me about your family. First of all, a lot of people may not realize Priscilla is one of 5 children. Mm-hmm. And she is the second to youngest, right?
Second to the youngest.
Okay, so kind of go through the order of who's who.
So my oldest is Crystal, and my second to the oldest is Victoria. And then it's Oliver, the only boy right in the middle, Priscilla and Isabella.
Okay. All right. So one boy in the middle of 4 girls.
Yes.
Yeah. So he probably learned all the things that have to do with girls and roller coasters and ups and downs and a little bit of drama, right?
I remember saying, Oliver, if you don't get girls, I don't, there's no hope for you because you got 4 of them. And one time when, him and Priscilla were the closest in age, and Priscilla loved everything about her brother, his friends, everything. And they were just buck heads. And I remember one time Oliver was so mad at her. And I said, Oliver, I'm going to tell you something right now. If you don't figure out how to get along with Priscilla, I said, you know what's going to happen? God's going to give you a wife just like her. And he started crying and he goes, that's the rudest thing anybody's ever said to me.
He started crying.
He's like, I can't believe that's the rudest thing anybody has ever said to me.
What is it like for the siblings to be along on this ride and this journey with Priscilla and just all the fun that you guys have had with her?
It is. I think the whole family has always believed in Priscilla, and we all, You don't know where it's going to take you. You know, her coming to Nashville, we're like, yeah, we'll see where this goes. But we believed in her. She was a star in our family, really, to be honest with you. Everybody's proud of her. You know, it's all of our success, all of our journey. And they've all had successes in their own right, every single one of my children. But to be able to come to her shows and it just feels like it's part of us. Like her story is our story, right? When you have a big family, it's all of our story.
Yeah. You're all on the journey together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about young Priscilla. Is it kind of who we still see today? Was she always just out there, not shy? And
it is the grown up version of her. She was always the life of the party. You know, Priscilla would walk in and a room would light up. She's always had a deep understanding for people, but she, there was no secrets with Priscilla. Like she would tell everybody everything. And we had spoke a little bit about this before we got on camera that I'd lost a baby and we had the ashes, in our backyard under a rose bush. Mm-hmm. And it was around, Halloween time, and Oliver and the kids went trick-or-treating and they come back and Oliver has tears. He's like, Mom, I'm never trick-or-treating with Priscilla again. She's told everybody we have a dead baby buried in our backyard.
Oh my goodness. No filter whatsoever.
She had no filter.
That's terrible.
She was a child that, I mean, and I think she wanted, when you have five kids, everybody's talking. Like when you're in a car, she'd always, Mom, Mom, Mom.
Try to be the loudest to get the attention. Yeah, it's hard when you're one of five.
Yeah, and she would always get my attention because she'd finally say Mom so many times. And then she'd go, Miss Lori.
I knew you were going to say that because my oldest Cooper, that he learned that at a very young age. And to this day, will say, Jennifer, if. You know, I'm not answering, or sometimes he does it just to be, you know, persnickety.
Yeah. But she was always, she is exactly, I mean, sometimes I look at her and I like, she's grown up, but she's, Priscilla's very honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think most artists are, and she's very, transparent, you know, I mean, I remember at the beginning because I was raised different. And I think I always pretended a lot. It's something that I needed to overcome in my life. I think my ex-husband and I were pastors, we just wanted everything to look like everything was perfect, you know? But Priscilla, being an artist and being vulnerable to write about your life and share it and be that transparent has been so freeing for me. It was just like, this is me. This is who I am. Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you feel like there's part of Priscilla's personality that's kind of helped you to realize that personally as well?
Oh, 100%. Like, I think my kids, I don't know if you feel like this, but my kids are my teachers. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I've learned so much about compassion and so many things from my kids. Like, a couple years ago on my vision board, I put Dare to Wear. I've always been very reserved. Like, you know, we came from a different era in the 80s. You know, body image was everything. Priscilla dealt with it some when she moved to Nashville. But when she started writing about her songs and just being who she is and embracing your body, like we're not our body. Like I know we're not bodies, right? Mm-hmm. But somehow, just her freedom to be herself has freed me so much. Like it really was my gift in life to free me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's strong. Wow. And I know that you're so proud of her for seeing it. I think that's part of her relatability as an artist too, is just putting it all out there. And so it's almost like, you know, we'll get to that, you know, a little bit more in a minute, but when she put out the TikTok videos and some of the ones that were resonating with girls, like, look at this girl, look at this talented girl on her way to big stages. That's talking about something I can relate to.
Yes.
You know, I think that was so important and such a part of her message. So at what point did the music thing begin? I read that she found a guitar in the attic, but I wasn't sure if that's part of the story or not. There's a lot of stuff out there, you know?
Yeah. Well, I played the guitar. I learned to play when I was a teenager, and music was always big for me. I mean, through high school, and I went to a year of Bible college and did music, but I always loved music, and I had an old guitar in the attic, and she's just the one that took on music. She wanted to learn how to play everything. She plays a lot by ear. She would get on YouTube and figure it out, figure out chords, figure out different things. And then I would always want her to come up and do praise and worship with me. She didn't always want to, but yeah, she would, you know.
So you led music at the church, mm-hmm, like praise and worship, mm-hmm, music. Okay. So she, yeah, would kind of come up and do, yeah, that with you. Did she take an interest at a young age more so than the other kids in music?
Oh, 100%. Okay. Yeah. It was just kind of her. I think it was an outlet for her. There was some rough times in school, and she found her outlet, almost therapy, through, mm, going in her room and learning to write. Like, a lot of her songs talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, the Peakton High School or, yeah, those kind of things.
Yeah. So she started writing at a young age as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Writing her own song. What did you think of those songs that she was writing at a young age?
Oh, I look back on the first songs that she wrote at, I think, 14, mm-hmm, in her room, and she could put them out today. She has more songs that she's done than I just can't even believe it. And it's really, it's teary for me, because I don't know if you feel like this with your son, but when you have a daughter that, or a son that is an artist, people don't realize this. We get to sit in on private therapy sessions that they had, right?
Yes.
And I mean, I get teary about this, because a lot of times she'll be performing and people love the song, but I know where she was during that time in her life. Mm. I know the heartache that she went through. I know the things that she was struggling with in her body, and to overcome it, it's like she's up there singing, but she's singing pages out of her diary. Mm. You know?
Yeah, that's where that vulnerability,
yeah,
and personal thing come through. I think what we found with Connor at that same stage of life, particularly middle school, high school, was, and maybe more so with a boy, but he may not come to us and wasn't open about a lot of things. But if we were just patient enough and waited, there'd be a song,
yes,
about it. And, yeah, then you could tell how he was processing things. Mm-hmm. And it was his therapy, him and that guitar. And we've, yeah, always said, while other kids took, you know, teddy bears or things on family vacations, we didn't go anywhere without the guitar.
Yeah.
Because he might need it. Because, exactly, it was something he needed.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't just like, oh, this is fun, I'll pick up the guitar. It was a necessity for him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really why I am so for the arts, even in school today, because nobody knows, people are realizing it now, but that's an outlet where so many kids could have turned to other things, but they found a love of music. Mm-hmm. They found a love of maybe art. Or even sports. Find the clubs. It's important,
yeah,
during that age, right?
Oh,
to,
yeah,
find an outlet.
So you mentioned that some of the songs, like when you hear her perform them, you knew those tough places. What were some of the things maybe that other moms of girls could relate to that she was dealing with in middle school and high school?
My kids always had a lot of friends, and Priscilla has been everything. Like, she's been very athletic. She was a cheerleader. She's always had a likability, you know. Her brother played sports, so she knew all the football players and all of that kind of things. But there was a season where her body changed, and she went to a high school that was, I would say, very cliquish in, mm-hmm, a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like the tennis moms, and you had to fit a certain body image and all of that.
Isn't it interesting how some of those, you mentioned the moms first, sometimes it's the moms in those situations that kind of dictate what that environment's going to be like in the school too, right?
It is.
That always surprises me.
It was so that way. And I mean, looking back, and I remember even thinking, it was, you know, like there's that Southern term, like, bless your heart,
yeah,
what that means,
yeah,
like, you know. But it never seemed real to me. It was like, this isn't the real world. And Priscilla had these years where she was struggling. So then she came back one year and she didn't make the cheerleading team. And she was struggling with her body. And I referred to that song, Peakton High School. It is one of my favorite songs that she wrote. But it was that time in life where she even asked a guy to a dance and he turned her down. And her body was changing so much. You know, in that song, it says, I went to the pool and her friend called her fat at the pool. You know,
yeah.
I'm sure you've listened to the song.
Yeah. And been there.
Yeah. And it's just like these things and you know, at the time you want to rescue your child, mm-hmm, from that hurt so much. the pain of not being accepted. In that song, she writes, so if you're sitting all alone, I just want you to know I've been there. It got me here. I'm thankful.
That gave me chills.
Yeah. And it makes me cry because she was that girl sitting all alone in her room. And when she sings that and her fans hear that, there's been a lot of girls that they don't fit that perfect body image. Mm-hmm. And, I'm so grateful I wasn't able to rescue my kids from things that I wanted desperately to rescue them from at the time.
It takes getting to this point to look back on it though, doesn't it? Don't you think? Because in the moment you would do anything to take that pain away and whatever that our kids are dealing with. But you have to have the perspective of some years later to look back and say, I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah. I realized that the pain was her gift and her rate. And it is for all of us, right? I think that's why you're supposed to be grateful in all things. If you learn from it, it taught her so much compassion. And I think I didn't realize how bad she was hurting, you know? And when she was little, once when we had just moved to North Carolina, she was born in Southern California.
Oh, okay.
We moved to North Carolina and we were coming out of church one day and there, I had to get her out of the nursery because she was a screamer. I was like, that's Priscilla. My number's going to come up. And I remember I come out and I'm holding her on my hip and she is screaming like, here we go to the van again. You know, we're just getting her out there. And this guy was a special speaker from South Africa and he followed me out to my car and he looks at me. He goes, I don't know who this little girl is, but she's going to be relatable and be able to touch millions one day. And I was like, well, let's hope so, because she screams all the time. But that's the only child that anybody ever...
She was like
a toddler? She was like one.
One. And he said that about her.
Yeah, he said that about her. He goes, she's going to touch millions one day. She's, you know, we went on about it a little bit. He said, she's going to be able to walk in a room and identify with everyone there. And I've referred back to that so many times in my life that her journey's not mine. You know, we're as parents... We get an opportunity to steer them, but my kids' journey is not mine. Mm-hmm. And I've had to realize that their dreams are not my dreams. They have a plan and a purpose that's probably greater than mine.
Yeah.
For sure.
Bigger than what you probably could even imagine for her.
Mm-hmm.
So let's fast forward a little bit to high school. At what point did the talk of moving to Nashville come into play? And did you always have a piece about that? It's not easy to let your kids go. And you guys were living, you raised your kids in Raleigh, right? Raleigh, mm-hmm. North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not that close to Nashville.
No.
But I guess she kind of figured out that Nashville was where she needed to be to pursue this dream. How were you with that?
Well, this one was always the one that's like, Mom, I'm going to experience life. This is what I'm doing. I am not going to go to a university. I'm going to Nashville. It's always been her dream. Like she had Luke Bryan on the back of her bedroom door. I'm going to sing at the Opry one day. She was going to go to Nashville. It was not even like, we never even thought anything different.
She even applied to college or even look into?
No, it was like, I'm going. She ended up graduating 6 months before the end of high school. She was done.
Oh, wow.
And came to Nashville. So she's been here right at 10 years.
So she was 18?
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is we had this neighborhood boys that, you know, were just like our family friends. And his name was Braxton Berrios and Priscilla. They were close in age. And he would always say, every once in a while, we'd carpool. Braxton would say, well, when I'm leaving high school, I'm going to the NFL. And Priscilla's like, well, I'm going to Nashville. And they would say it all the time. And we'd be like, yeah, they are. And I am not kidding you. Once Priscilla was playing doing a show in like a sports bar, and she's playing her guitar, and I look up, and Braxton Berrios played for the Patriots, her friend. He was on the TV, and Priscilla was playing her guitar. And I mean, I text his mom. I'm like, these two manifested their dreams.
No kidding. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Cheers to them. That is really awesome.
Yeah, but she was, and I'm telling you, Priscilla owned her own dream. Priscilla's dream was always, she's like, nope, this is what I'm doing. And Priscilla moved here when she first got to Nashville. I mean, it was like just dropping her off. We did not know about this town, this city. We didn't know, not even, I didn't even know how to tell her to, how she was going to figure it out.
Yeah. And y'all didn't know much about the music business or anything either, right?
No. And that, I'm going to tell you, she would play on corners. She would dumpster dive and get furniture out, refinish it, put it on the internet and try to sell it. She
did everything. This is when she moved to Nashville?
Yes. Wow. We never, Priscilla has never asked her or my father, her or her father for a dime.
Wow. We've Super independent.
Yeah. She's like, this is my dream and I will figure out how to make it happen. And she did.
What are some of the odd jobs she had while she was trying to make the dream come true?
Oh my goodness. She's cleaned Airbnbs. She's like found furniture, always finding furniture on the side of the roads, anything, and going home and painting it and then putting it on Facebook Marketplace. She worked at a smoothie bar. And that was, I don't know if you've ever heard that story, but that's really where things changed for Priscilla, because she worked in a smoothie bar. She did go to Nashville Community College for business. Mm-hmm. She was going to just like, let me just take some business courses. Mm-hmm. I want to be smart in business. And she was doing that, just trying to figure out this town, like, who do I write with? Trying to get her foot in the door anywhere. And she was worked at the smoothie bar and she got up late and she decides, well, I'm just going to throw something on. I got to get to work. She throws a Taylor Swift t-shirt on. But on the way to the smoothie bar where she worked, her and my daughter were having a conversation and she's like, Crystal, like I don't know what I'm doing. You know, it was one of those low points. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Things aren't opening up for me and I feel lost. And, you know, my daughter's like, Priscilla, you won't be a failure if you come back home. And she's like, yeah, but I don't know. Just nothing's happening. It was, you know,
but for the first time, she was kind of considering maybe.
Yeah.
Just not, this isn't happening. Yeah. What do I do next? Maybe. And it included maybe going home.
Yeah. It's like the darkest moment in a storm before you see clearly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Tucker and I have a product that we are so excited to tell you about. Coat Defense has been a game changer in trying to keep Tucker smelling good and looking handsome, even though he loves to roam all over our property and get dirty. Coat Defense is a daily preventative powder that reduces the number of baths I have to give Tucker. Do you know how hard it is to wash an 80-pound golden retriever? It also eliminates the bacteria that can cause odor in the first place. And unlike a typical deodorant or spray, Coat Defense is healthier. It doesn't mask the odor, it eliminates it. So there's less scratching, paw licking, and head shaking, and a whole lot more cuddle time with mom because he just stays so much fresher. Tucker's friends at Coat Defense are offering you 15% off to try the daily preventative powder or any of the other awesome products they offer for your pet's health. Just use code MAMA15 at checkout.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at rootsmusicrambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
So then that day after work, circumstance, like I say, there's no coincidences. Everything right. is divinely ordained, right?
Yes.
And she comes out of work, has a Taylor Swift t-shirt on. Taylor Swift comes driving by. She's at the corner standing there. Taylor backs up her car and, hey, thanks for representing, you know, she's got it on. And Priscilla goes up, talks to her, takes a selfie with her, and she comes back that night and she goes, I'm quitting everything and doing music full time. It's sink or swim.
Wow.
And it was that encouragement, like, oh my God, like it was like, Priscilla, don't quit. I know this looks dark, but that was that little hope that she needed to go, I'm just going to throw myself in.
Yeah. Almost like you pray for a sign of what's next.
Yeah.
And then she sees somebody who's doing what she wants to be doing. And
yeah.
How cool. So was Taylor just in the car by herself? And
yeah, she was. And backed her car up and called Priscilla over to the car and they took a selfie and talked to her for a little bit. And Priscilla was, she said that she was so like, couldn't even believe it that she didn't even tell Taylor she did music.
Oh yeah.
You know, she is just like, it was just one of those moments, yeah. But it was everything.
And it turned everything around. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did she quit her jobs and just
She quit school. She quit everything. And she's ended up just, I'm doing this full blast.
So more playing on Broadway more writing, or wherever she was playing.
More writing. She's mm-hmm. continued to write. She was doing really good. You know, she was singing at places. People were, you know.
Still singing for tips, yeah. though, right? Like, yeah. jar maybe a little bit of money here mm-hmm. and there.
But she was doing well enough that she's like, you know what? I've waited for a long time. I'm going to get my own apartment, skyrise apartment. She lived, and it was enough that, you know, she was paying her rent and yeah. everything. Well, then the pandemic hit. Like, what? The world changed, yeah. you know? And I remember when the shutdown happened, I called all my kids and I said, I'm going to tell you something right now. This is the biggest gift that's ever been offered to us. When does the world stop that we can, like, we can change anything that you want? It never stops. Mm. It'll either be the greatest thing or it'll be the worst thing. Let's make it the greatest thing. Well, so she is like not making any money. And, you know, when you're on tips, it's month to month. You don't have money sitting in the bank.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, I'm about to get evicted out of this place. And she was getting evicted, and she found this dive hole in downtown Nashville, and she was going to move in. It was a one room place. So me and my oldest daughter, Crystal, we come down that weekend. We're moving her out of her apartment, and I'll never forget. You know, here's this apartment that she's got fixed so good. Priscilla is an amazing decorator. Like, she is just, I mean, I'm like, this beautiful apartment. And we move, and we go to the place where she's moving into, and she gets a room in a house. I walked in. I was like, I'm still shocked. I'm like, you can't even believe the place. You're like, worst nightmare. And my oldest daughter turns and looks at me, and she goes like this. She looks at me and she goes, Mom, don't you say a word. Priscilla needs this for her story. Mm. And
how insightful.
Yeah,
her.
She did. She's like, Priscilla needs this. And we got her moved in there. And you know, those two girls went out that night. I stayed home because I was tired. I stayed there. And that's when she wrote her first number one song, you know, just about over you.
Wow.
She ran into an old boyfriend and she came home. She's like, oh my gosh, Mom, you are not going to believe who I just ran into. I'm like, who?
Somebody she was just about over.
Just about over. And I'm like, what are the chances? So she wrote that song and she played it on TikTok. And she just started playing on TikTok, just sharing her life, like, hey, seeing what the fan, what they would like, and they fell in love with her.
At the time, I guess, did we really even know the power of TikTok at the time? Like, that you could actually get discovered from that, or that the chance, you know.
You know what was funny? Because that Christmas, my granddaughter, Sienna, she had said, hey, she had always been saying, hey, you need to get on TikTok. And Priscilla was like, Sienna, TikTok is a dance app. I am not getting on. I'm not a dancer. Uh-huh. But that Christmas, she just decides to, like, let's just make a TikTok for the fun of it. And yeah. It was hilarious. But then she just, when she was confined, she's like, I'm just going to reach out on social media. I've got to do what I can do. Mm-hmm. And so she just wrote so much during that time.
Wow.
And would just be raw and herself on social media, no makeup. She didn't care. She was just like, you know, singing things. She'd have her little glass of wine sitting there. And yeah, it was amazing.
When she was writing so much in Nashville, did she send you, or does she still send you new stuff, or like something that she's excited about or proud of? Does she still love to send it to you?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. I was thinking about this. I go, if Jennifer asks me what's my favorite song, I'm going to say her next one.
That's a great answer. Yeah.
Because that's how I feel. Like every time, like I just am like, oh, that's my new favorite. Every concert I go to, that was your best concert. Yeah. I'm telling you.
It's almost embarrassing, isn't it? But you really do feel that way.
I do. It's like the first time, every single time.
And did she go as far as creating a fake booking company when she was trying to get these gigs?
Oh, she was faking her age. She was like,
because she wasn't even old enough to play in some of these bars she was in, right?
Oh, no, she wasn't. But she was going to figure out a way to get in. I mean, you know, she's saying it. What is it? The big fest that they have,
like CMA Fest here in
CMA town? Fest. Yeah. And so the first time she's like, well, I play right downtown all the time. I'm just going to pretend like I'm one of the artists here.
Yeah.
People didn't care. Fans just wanted to hear her. But Priscilla was always, I'm going to figure out a way. And even if it's going up and talking to the bouncer and promising that I promise you, I will not drink. I just want to go in. Just give me a chance. Right. And oh yeah, she'd find a way. She still finds a way.
Well, I remember that Priscilla was one of the first artist I ever got like a press release on or an announcement that said that basically she was a viral TikTok star. And so that's how the record company, is it UMG? That signed her. Mm-hmm. And they didn't hide it or anything. They're like, this girl has reached this many millions of people.
Yes.
And they made it kind of part of how they initially, it felt like anyway, marketed her.
Yeah. You know, it was amazing because people on TikTok, I think because we were so confined and I think we were all craving relatability. Like, am I the only one that is like having my second glass of wine and it's 10 in the morning? Like, you know, we wanted to identify with anybody. And she just started getting on there and was herself talking about her day. And I would look at TikTok and her fans, and it was just like climbing and climbing and people commenting. And she actually had this girl that was her fan in California that started a fan page with all of her followers and said, listen, let's fund her to release this song just about over you. And they did.
Wow.
And she went and recorded it. I think it was like really fast. I mean, within like weeks, she had wrote that song and was then
actually
released
it.
And yeah, and it went like number one on iTunes. I mean, we were like, wait, what is happening here?
Yeah.
And they just stood by her. I mean, every single thing that she did, they just started eating it up. It was like people, she was just an overnight star on TikTok. But she really wasn't.
Yeah, I think that's what's so important about her story is realizing it's not somebody who just happened to put up a song on. She had been doing the grind for a long time, you know, before that happened. What am I correct, though, that when she was first offered or UMG came to her, there was no management? There was no, like, it was just her.
Yeah, it was just her.
And just trying to put out music as creatively as she could because she was so limited in 2020, as we all were. But I mean, how did they even reach her? Or what do you remember about that phone call you got from Priscilla?
Well, it really started to snowball when they saw her traction and her personality on TikTok. She got a lot of offers. There were people coming out of the woodwork. And I mean, people, like, you have to remember, Priscilla had been knocking on doors.
Yeah.
And every time she would go somewhere, she goes, if I had $10 for every time somebody said, you know what, you need to lose 30 pounds and then maybe we'll consider you. You know, it was always about that. So much.
So people actually told her that. It wasn't her assuming that was why she wasn't getting signed, but she would actually get to have meetings or talk with people. And she was told that
all the time.
Wow.
All the time. You know what? If the industry, you need to lose 30 pounds. You need to lose 30 pounds. And, I think that's probably one of her proud moments when she gets on stage. She's like, here's to everybody that told me that I had to be other than who I am to get on this stage, you know? And I think when it hit in her heart that, you know what, I have this body, I'm going to be proud of it. I'm never going to be Carrie Underwood that is so, you know, Carrie Underwood, she does a lot of work on her legs. I mean, she's beautiful. Let's face it. Like, she is. I'm not going to be that, but can I be relatable where I'm at?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when she got on TikTok, I think that was the one thing that she started going, here were girls that wouldn't even dare wear tight jeans, that didn't ever fix themselves up. And she started encouraging them, rock the booty shorts. Like, we got one lifetime, do that. And then, you know, they started wanting to see, where did you get that? Where did you get that top? Where did you get this? And she wasn't ashamed of it. And they could tell she wasn't faking it.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things I even noticed in her styling. And I'm guessing that she, you talked about her being a good decorator, and she obviously has an incredible sense of fashion, but that she has a big say in what she wears and choosing things as opposed to just maybe bringing in a stylist. But she's never shied away from, you know, like someone who doesn't have this perfect body in any kind of music or entertainment world, a lot of times might try to wear something big and flowy and sheer that hides all the imperfections of who you are. But she doesn't do that. Mm-mm. She wears what she wants when she wants is what I see as just a fan.
Yeah. Because who's the one that defines beauty?
Yeah.
I mean, who says that beauty is this weight or that weight? Mm-hmm. I mean, she's stunning. She's beautiful. But I think it's what she's done. It's not what Priscilla has just done for young girls that have felt, you know, less than who they are in those hard years as teenage girls, especially.
Right.
I don't know that boys struggle as much, but what Priscilla has done for women.
Absolutely.
Even women my age, they're like, oh my goodness. Like, I wish I had, I tell my friends right now, I go, we're not going out and together and you guys start picking at yourself. There are people younger than us that have died. You know what I mean? Like what, when do you quit picking at yourself?
Yeah.
Embrace it. My goodness. Just enjoy life. You're beautiful.
Mm-hmm. If you're not using the Core 4 products for long-term skin health, you're likely very underwhelmed by the results of your skincare routine. Think of building your skincare routine like building a house. You need a solid foundation. Otherwise, your house will collapse. The same thing applies to your skin. If you're not using the Core 4, your skin lacks the resources to be healthy. So what are the Core 4 products? A vitamin C, SPF, an exfoliant, and a retinoid. These four products protect, repair, and strengthen the skin, and they are the first four products that are really worth investing in because they are the powerhouse of your routine. Bare Faced makes it easy to get started with these four essentials with their Bare Necessities Bundle. This bundle can be customized to your skin type when you take the 5-minute skin quiz on barefaced.com. They even break down exactly how to use each product and how to introduce them into your routine. Super simple and effective. Hey, got it from my mama listeners. Get a discount code. Use MAMA15 to get 15% off your first Bare Faced purchase.
The opening line on like her bio, like when you go to either her website or to read about her, is literally, this is me, love it or leave it. Exactly. And that really kind of has been her motto of being true to the core, the authenticity. And people see that.
Yeah.
I think that anybody who's had success in this business had to have some level of being real, relatable, honest, all the things. But I keep thinking about like young girls who can look at your daughter and just be like, hey, I could do that. I may not be perfect physically of what society says I need to be, but look at like someone that's having the success like Priscilla is. She's gorgeous, but she has struggled and now she does it openly and girls can relate to that. I just think there's so much power in that.
Yeah. And she, you know, her style, Priscilla pretty much styles herself.
I thought maybe she did.
And she has a clothesline with Shein. Like she has big visions.
Yeah.
And because she's been the one that's walked in places and like, where's the jeans for me? I'm sorry. Like zero is not a size. Like, what is that? You know what I mean? But she's like, she's always had a vision like for just looking your best and having fun with clothes and fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? That's so much fun. I bet she gets that from her mama.
Well, she might.
I'm just looking at you here today, all in leather and hot pink shoes and looking so amazing.
Oh, thank you.
So you mentioned something in the early part of the interview, a word that I just keep thinking about, and you said on your vision board. And do you know how much I love the idea that you're in your 50s and you make a vision board? And that you're still dreaming and reinventing yourself. I just want to talk about that a little bit because I think as a mom at that age too, that the relatability there of, and even starting this podcast, this was brand new for me and trying to figure out, okay, you know, what's next? And similar to like, I guess maybe just image in general of a struggle of someone who's been in broadcasting and been on television. Well, when you start getting older, it's difficult.
Yeah.
Like it's a hard business to age in and trying to figure out like what's next for me. And, you know, life isn't over just because, you know, now I've got the empty nest and all that. And just trying to figure out, you know, how to still dream.
Yes.
And I think you've figured that out.
Well, you know, I don't talk about it much, but I was married for 32 years. Mm-hmm. I was married when I had just turned 19.
Were you a stay-at-home mom for the most part raising your kids?
Yes, a stay-at-home mom. I homeschooled for a lot of the time.
Oh, wow.
That's what I was. I was a stay-at-home. My husband traveled all the time.
And he was a pastor?
Well, we had a church on the side years later, but he had always traveled a lot. So it was basically me and the kids.
Okay.
And, when the kids were getting out of the house, Priscilla, you know, I think a lot of women, divorce is big for women. Marriage is really after 25 years to 30 years. It's huge right now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't something that I dreamed of, but it was something that happened. I was like, I've got to figure out myself, like how to go into the workplace. I'd never worked outside of the home. I'd done home organizing and some things. And I got a job in a medical facility.
After you and your husband said
this was right before. So I saw the writing on the wall. We'd already brought Priscilla to Nashville. So my youngest one, Isabella, was in high school towards her senior year.
So the only one you still had at home.
Yeah. And so I got this job. I remember coming home and I was like, Isabella, can you take me to the public library and teach me how to use a mouse? And I did not know how to copy, paste. I didn't know anything. Well, I end up going to work in a medical office. The time that I was there, I had to learn 4 different computer systems. So I got like a crash course, you know. But then as time went on and I went through my divorce, I think as mothers, there's a lot of things in our life that we put on shelves. Mm-hmm. And because we don't have time to be broken down on the side of the road, right? Like our kids are depending on us every day. Like they don't want to see... It's like, I'm going to put that on that shelf and I'm going to deal with that one day. I'm going to put that on the shelf and deal with it one day. Mm-hmm. Well, pretty soon shit starts falling off that shelf. Okay.
It gets weighed down.
Yeah. It's usually when the last child is leaving and I had never been alone in my whole life. I'm the oldest of 10 children.
Are you really?
I am.
Wow.
And then I had 5 children. I had 6, lost one, but... I had never, ever, ever been alone. And it was terrifying. And right before my divorce, I said, I'm going to run towards the very thing that scares me the most. And I knew the marriage was over. And I ran towards it. I'm like, I'm going to do this. I don't care. I know it's what has to happen. Wow. And so I slowly just said, I've got to reinvent myself. I'm going to reinvent myself. I went to work for a dentist, Dr. Agarwal in Raleigh, North Carolina, and he restored my belief back in my confidence and really men in general. Like he took me under his wing. He believed in me. And his wife hired me, if you can imagine, his wife hired me to be his executive assistant based on this. I am hiring you because you have been a mother of 5. You can handle him. And I was like, I came out and I was like, God, I've never been rewarded for being a mother, that there is value in that for corporations, for everything. Mm-hmm. Like I've held down the fort, you know?
Yeah. It's an organization skill like no other.
It is. And so I just started like slowly trying to invent myself. And then right before the pandemic, I did a seminar with my boss, it was October before the world came crashing down. Mm-hmm. And I had already bought a house in Atlanta. And I said, people are like, why are you moving from Raleigh to Atlanta? And I said, I'm going to reinvent myself. I've only known how to be my mother's children in this town. And I've only known how to be a wife in this town. I didn't know how to be single.
So you wanted a completely fresh start, new city, new everything. And you chose Atlanta.
I did. But my oldest daughter had graduated from Emory. So I was in like Decatur in that area. Mm-hmm. Well, little did I know that Priscilla was going to hit it big. And Crystal, the one I moved to be kind of close to, she's like, I'm going to go to Nashville to be by her. So she up and moves. And in God's plan had me all by myself, what I said I was going to run towards, being by myself. And it has been the darkest, but the brightest. Like, it was time, like, I finally got to know me. All those things that I'd put on that shelf all those years, little bit by little bit. Okay, now let's deal with that. That was a hurt. That was a pain. That was something that you played like didn't bother you, but it did. I will say the one thing that Priscilla has taught me the most is there was a lot of things. I want to say that I felt like I was truly honest in my life. I remember one time I went into Priscilla's room and she had been writing and I was hugging her. And she said, "Mom, you're not happy." And I remember I burst into tears and I go, "What are you talking about? I'm the most happy person in the world." And she's like, "If that's happy, Mom, I don't want that." And I walked out and I thought I was even fooling my kids.
Is this before the divorce?
Yeah, it was before.
And that was very eye-opening.
Yeah, I was like, I have been pretending like everything's okay, like I'm happy. And I remember one time when I was young, my family was falling apart, my 10 siblings and me being the oldest. And I mean, my parents were, the hell was breaking loose. They were going to get a divorce. There were 10 of us. Can you imagine?
No.
And I remember telling my brothers and sisters, I was like, "This is what we're going to do. We're going to get up and we're going to put clothes on and we're going to go to church and we're going to look our best and nobody's going to ever know."
So you had kind of always been the person that wanted to create the facade.
Yeah, I want to pretend.
Perfection and being happy, the perfect little family,
yeah.
All of those things.
Yeah, and then I was part of the fear of running towards my fear. I'm like, you know what? I'm willing to fall off the pedestal. Mm. It was a pedestal that I had built for myself. I think people knew it around me, but my kids just teaching me, "Mom, we're going to love you no matter what." Yeah. I was just terrified. I had wanted to build a picture and I wanted the world to see that this is the picture. And Priscilla had once wrote a song about, I lived in a glass house, you know, about to shatter, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and
was yeah. that about you?
Yeah, it was. There's a lot of songs that's about me and our dad and the family. And, you know, when you have a lot of kids or even siblings, everybody sees it through their lens. Mm-hmm. You know, the oldest is going to see it different than the youngest, but it's their story. And Priscilla has been honest even in her songwriting where she'd say, "Yeah, I'm writing about our family. It's not you guys' story. This is how I interpreted it. This is the way I saw it.
Y'all went through."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when she's on stage and she's like, "Yeah, my parents," she starts telling one of those stories, I'm like, "Where's this going?" But you know what? It's so good because it's honest. It's relatable. Yeah. Everybody has brokenness in
absolutely.
Families.
Absolutely. Somebody's going to relate to all different portions of your story.
I was raised Mormon and came out of Mormonism when I was a senior in high school into Christianity. My family, all my family. Came out of it, but
all your family came out of Mormonism.
Out of Mormonism.
Oh wow!
But yeah, I was born and raised in Utah. You forgot to ask me where I was born.
If you said Utah and you were one of 10, I might have put it together, but I didn't ask you that.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I had clung on to religion, had taught me a lot of judgments in my life, mm-hmm. and all judgment is self-judgment, right? I had a lot of judgment about myself. Once my kids started, it was them that really was my salvation, showing me about, I would have missed out on so much of my kids' life if I had stayed in this box, like, this is what it looks like, this is what we do.
Yeah, which is how you were raised, right?
Yeah, and even when I came into, my family became Christians, born-again Christians, when I was a senior, like, I was involved in music. You weren't allowed to listen to secular music. No country music. Like, you are singing gospel and mm-hmm. that's it. And I mean, my kids, I remember at a time in their life, Crystal had gotten a Destiny's Child CD. And when she was gone to school, I was like, this is from the devil. And I broke that CD. Now I love Beyonce. I'm like, what was wrong with you?
Wow.
But your kids teach you about God's grace and
amen.
About
uh-huh.
Boy, they are our teachers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What is the role of your faith in your life now in this new beginning for you and taking part in your kids' journeys and all of that?
Well, I will never, ever not. My earliest memory in my life is knowing that there's a divine in my life. I may not have been able to define it, but really, when I became a mom, I started thinking to myself, you know, Priscilla calls me Miss Lori. Some of my kids call me Mama, Mom, Mother, you know. And I said, you know what? I answer to all these names. And I'm not defined by any of those names. I hear my child when they cry. And I could hear her in the nursery. That's my baby. My friends would be like, how do you know? I know her voice. Mm-hmm. That's my baby crying in the nursery. And I really think being a mom has taught me about God's mercies and love and how he must feel about me. You know, if he loves me half as much as I love my kids.
Yeah, that's what's unfathomable to me.
And you know what? That's what I found being alone was I found that I am loved for me. Mm-hmm. I needed to know that. I will never not be connected to the divine. It might not be defined. I'm not in a church every Sunday, but I worship daily. Mm-hmm. My kids have the love of God in their hearts. They will never not know that.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Tell me what you think Priscilla got from her mama. I can just sit here and tell you probably five things in our little 45-minute conversation we've had, but just from getting to know you.
I think Priscilla got a love for people in her heart. Like, I really do love people. I do. I love my kids. I think Priscilla got her thriftiness and trying to make something out of nothing, like she still does. The love for thrift stores. She got her big hair, her big earring, you know. If I could only teach my kids one thing on this earth, and it sounds maybe cliche or whatever, I would teach my kids gratitude. And I am going to tell you, Priscilla's grateful. There's not a time that she doesn't get on that stage and is grateful for every single person. Like, in that's my favorite song, you know, Peaked in High School Again. It says, if you're sitting there all alone again, I want you to know I've been there. It got me here. I'm thankful. Yeah. And she got her, I would want to hope that she got her thankfulness from me.
Yeah. Being grateful for everything.
Be grateful. Yeah. The world might be crashing down, but just be grateful. Like, go write in your gratitude journal. I promise it'll pull you out of any hole. And moms, that be grateful for the little things because it passes that fast,
isn't
right?
Isn't that the truth? Absolutely. What's your grandma name? Now you're getting to enjoy those youngsters.
Mimi or Grammy. It's usually Mimi or Grammy.
Okay, so you've got a couple different ones, then, depending on which child,
I'll answer by anything. I will answer to anything.
I love it. Well, it's so nice to spend time with you. I'm so proud of Priscilla. You're going to be watching her at the Grand Ole Opry tonight.
Yep. That was on her vision board, the Opry, and I think tonight is her seventh or eighth time at the Opry. So
that is awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Lori Block, thank you so much for this interview. I have no doubt that your words are going to be impactful to so many listeners. Be sure to hit subscribe on the podcast so you don't miss an episode. You can also watch these interviews on YouTube. Don't forget, the conversation keeps going when Priscilla joins us in part 2.